This episode is brought to you by HivePass. HivePass is the latest in membership management software that brings a radically different approach to how members join your organization, their experience as a member, and how you interact with them. Built by not only an app developer, but also a mountain biker, HivePass was made by a trail user for trail users. With an app-based platform, instant digital membership cards, ability to send push notifications to members, in-app trail status reports unique to your organization, HivePass is building the next generation of membership management software for your organization. Future additions to HivePass include an event system, automated custom trailhead signs, and much more. HivePass has been live in New Zealand and Australia for a few years, but just launched in Canada, and with this announcement, the United States. Over 50,000 trail users already use HivePass to support their local trail organization. HivePass is the world's first app-based membership management software built specifically for trail organizations. For all of the details, check out hivepass.app. That's www.hivepass.app, or download the HivePass app today. You're listening to Frontlines, a podcast for the people that truly make mountain biking happen. Not the riders, racers, or product designers, but the builders, advocates, and the often forgotten board members of your local mountain bike trail association. We're back with another episode focusing on New Zealand. And after this episode, I'd like to spend some time focusing on the topic of maintenance versus building. How do we gain more funding and how do we get more volunteers to help with the maintenance of existing trails as opposed to building new trails or new projects? If you'd like to get involved with that conversation, then please reach out, especially if you want to take part in a panel discussion with other guests on the topic. But for now, let's get to this episode. I'm your host, Brent Hillier, and this is episode 94 of Frontlines. So I'm joined by Fraser Gordon. He's the president of the Queenstown Mountain Bike Club. Hey, Fraser, thanks for joining me.
G'day, Brent. How you going, mate?
What I thought we kind of start with is tell us a little bit about not just the Queenstown Mountain Bike Club, but maybe Queenstown as well. How long has the organization been around? What's kind of the makeup of the town? And give us a little bit of a story of where you're coming from.
Yeah, so Queenstown, New Zealand, based in South Island, New Zealand, down in the South Pacific. Kind of a little town with a massive heart. We're a huge tourism destination, as probably everybody knows. Mountain biking's kind of been around probably since the early 90s, you know, with the that kind of creation of mountain biking. But the Queenstown Mountain Bike Club itself was actually formed in 2003, so we've just ticked over our 20-year anniversary last year. And in the early days, yeah, it was a pretty small, organic little group of passionate riders. But in the last sort of 10 years particularly, it's really grown into a pretty big beast for mountain biking and the Queenstown mountain biking destination that we've become.
And how did you get involved, not only with the organization, but in advocacy in general?
Yeah, so I've grown up mountain biking my whole life, really, and moved to Queenstown in the early 2000s. And always rode, and then sort of enjoyed helping out. I've always loved, you know, like being part of a community and volunteering. So in 2008, I actually joined the committee of the Queenstown Mountain Bike Club, sat on the committee for 8 years, 2008 to 2016, and was involved in some pretty cool trail building projects, especially up in the Ben Lomond Forest area. Sort of drove building a trail up there called GSD, which was like a grade 5-6 kind of like techie single track trail, and then we pushed into trying to build a jump trail up there as well. So also ran the local downhill series through the club for a few years. So sort of 2008-2016, I was pretty active, obviously a lot younger, didn't really have much life commitments in terms of a mortgage or kids or anything, so I had a lot of time on my hands to really get stuck in. And then I took a bit of a sabbatical in 2016. I resigned from the Queenstown Mountain Bike Club to actually form the Kelly McGarry Foundation, because my friend Kelly McGarry, New Zealand free rider, passed away. So we formed the Kelly McGarry Foundation. I was chairman of that, drove that for a few years with some pretty cool projects. And then last year we decided to wrap up the Kelly McGarry Foundation. We'd done some pretty awesome work with that, and it was time just to sort of signed that off, and then was pretty keen to get back into Queenstown Mountain Bike Club duties, and started getting nagged pretty heavily from a few other committee members and the former president about coming on into the presidential role. So was pretty keen for that, and then got voted in the AGM about 5 months ago, and we've hit the ground running.
That's great. I had a chance to meet Kelly actually when he was at Crankworks. I used to drive the shuttle bus at the slopestyle competition, and I remember one particular shuttle ride. I drove up to the top, and I dropped Kelly off. I think he might have been one of the only riders on the shuttle at the time, and he gets out, and I kind of waited for a little bit for him to grab his bike and kind of drove away, and I wasn't really paying attention. He hadn't grabbed his bike off the back of the truck yet. And as I kind of drove away with his bike on the truck, he started chasing after me. I felt so bad, and he couldn't have been nicer. Just one of the nicest guys I've ever met, and we had a good chuckle about it. I felt real bad that I drove away with his bike.
That'd be pretty funny. That'd be a sight to be seen.
Oh, I felt so bad. I was like, I can't believe I just drove away from this incredible professional mountain biker and took his bike down the road. But he was so nice about it. He's just one of the nicest human beings I had ever met. So it was
I've got visions. I've just got visions of 6'5" Kelly running down after a after a shuttle van. I mean, he was an amazing athlete on a bike, eh? Yeah. But I played I've played touch rugby and stuff with him and ran around it, but he's not too athletic in that space, eh? It'd be pretty funny to speak. Galloping giraffe.
Totally. I have the image in my mind of what I saw in the rearview mirror. It totally looked like that.
That's totally him, eh? He was always so chill, eh? Nothing really fazed him too much, eh? Good good character with a good sense of humor, eh?
Absolutely. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about just kind of the makeup of the ridership that you have on your trails. I know certainly there's obviously probably a local scene there, but you've got a big tourism aspect to that. You have a rough idea of like how many riders or what percentage of riders are tourists and what are kind of locals?
Yeah, it's a little bit hard for us to quantify. Our membership, local membership in our club at the moment is sitting around 2,200 members. We do have quite a few people from Australasia, like New Zealand and Australia, that actually are members, like paid up members of our club as well, because they ride here quite regularly and they want to support the scene. But as you've touched on, we have a huge amount of riders that are actually coming to Queenstown for a mountain biking holiday as a destination. And it's actually quite hard for us to sort of quantify what percentage, say, of tires on dirt are local active members, and then what percentage are visitors coming to town. But we estimate it's probably about 50-50, 50%, 50% in that space. A couple of years ago, we actually introduced a two-week membership pass for $25. So visiting riders that were coming here on their holiday could actually just join the club for like a two-week stint. Then they could get all the sort of the deals and the contribute towards our trails in that space. So it's a big challenge for us, so to speak, that our membership base and the money we get from membership doesn't really translate to the actual wear and tear and the amount of riding the trails are actually getting. So that's a bit of a challenge for us.
There's areas kind of around where I live that suffer from that more than I think we do. I think we have the North Shore of Vancouver is definitely a tourism draw, but I think Whistler has a bigger draw. So I think there's a lot of people that just bypass the North Shore and end up at Whistler. So I don't think we get as many tourists as maybe we could if we didn't have one of the top riding destinations in the world, arguably, an hour and a half up the highway. But it's got to create some challenges, not only from obviously the wear and tear and kind of that aspect, but I'm sure there's probably a little bit of resentment from the community as well. And so there's probably a bit of a balance to kind of make sure that the locals are still kind of happy to see those folks out there. Cause I know one of the things when I'm visiting a community, there's nothing that kind of spoils my visit than like the locals seeming to not want to have me there, and it's like, I always get frustrated with that, where it's like, look, I'm coming here and I'm stimulating your local economy. I'm going to all your great little restaurants and breweries and all that stuff. But you can often bump into these kind of grumpy locals. So hopefully that doesn't happen there.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think we're pretty good in that space. I think because Queenstown is such a massive tourism destination in general, mm-hmm. It's not just mountain biking. We've got you know, millions of international tourists coming here for their holiday and their overseas experience and traveling around New Zealand. You know, there's so many people here that are just here for a good time and a holiday. The whole town economy and the mentality is built around people visiting here to have a good time. And I think that probably translates a lot through into the mountain biking scene as well. I mean, so many locals that are actively involved in mountain biking are directly employed in tourism and in that hospitality space as well. So they understand the importance of people coming to, you know, to town to ride bikes, spend money, give them a job, that kind of thing. So I think we don't suffer from that as much as maybe, say, other towns with a mountain biking scene, where maybe mountain biking is the only reason people are visiting that town, and it is kind of a little bit more underground. We're pretty open to that. I mean, obviously, there's sometimes in peak season, you know, like in the school holidays and stuff, where some of the locals will rock up to the local Skyline Gondola to, you know, to do some laps in the Ben Lomond trails, and the queues, you know, like 100 meters long, and they're kind of like, oh, it's so busy, and there's so many people in town and that. But you know, you take it with a grain of salt. You know, everybody's here to ride bikes and have a good time. And yeah, I think it really helps that we're a massive tourism destination where, you know, it's really hard to avoid not meeting people from all over the world and seeing their stoke and getting fueled by their stoke because they've come to an amazing place to have an awesome time riding bikes.
Kind of when I see footage of Queenstown and I look at the trails, it kind of seems like the big kind of trail network is like a massive bike park, but this isn't similar to a place like Whistler, correct? Like it's the trails are public land. They're just accessible through a gondola. Is that how it works there?
Yep. That's correct. Yeah. So all Queenstown Mountain Bike Club trails are on public land, whether it's local council land, Queenstown Lakes District Council, which is public land, or whether it's government public land, which is managed by the Department of Conservation. But yeah, you are correct with, the Ben Lomond trails, which are directly above Queenstown, is all on public land. And Skyline Gondola, which is a commercial gondola operation, runs an uplift service up to the lower trails with about 470 vertical meters. But the actual Ben Lomond trail network goes that high up again, from Queenstown base to Ben Lomond Saddle. It's 1,100 vertical meters. And then to the south, we've got the Fernhill Loop through Beach Daz around to Kelly's Memorial Table, and then a whole bunch of trails to the south as well. So that's a huge trail network that's really close to town. That's all publicly accessed. There's a forestry road that goes right up through the middle of the Lower Ben Lomond trails. So, you know, you can ride up there, about 20 to 30 minutes to get up to the same elevation as the gondola. You can ride all the way around Beach Daz. You can access the trails through Ben Lomond Saddle or through Fernhill Loop. So, yeah, it is public access pretty much 24/7 that just happens to have a commercial uplift service. So we sort of say that it's not a bike park, so to speak. Like, you know, the person, company that's running the gondola doesn't manage the trails. The Mountain Bike Club manages the trails. And there's no, like, dedicated patrol, you know, like bike patrol there to assist or anything as well, because it is a public trails where anyone can go and ride. So it's a bit of a unique setup compared to other sort of, like, you know, lift access bike parks around the world.
Yeah. So how does, you know, I think what I would assume is probably a challenge then is that there's a funding model for the gondola, but not necessarily for the trail. So how does that work with the organization?
Yeah. So the gondola, Skyline Enterprise that runs the gondola, they contribute financially towards the maintenance of the trails. So, you know, obviously a cut of their, you know, obviously they're making money out of transporting people to the top. So yeah, so they do contribute towards the maintenance of the trails. And the Queenstown Lakes District Council in the last couple of years have recognised the importance of that trail network and how big it is for the town, and, you know, from an economic point of view as well. So they actually contribute towards that as well. So that trail area, the Ben Lomond trails, it's a massive beast just purely for the amount of riders that are riding that with that gondola access. But lucky for the club, it's not actually that much of a financial burden on the club to maintain that, because we do get that financial support from the commercial operator Skyline and also the council. So yeah, we manage that whole area, but yeah, as I say, our membership subs aren't subsidizing, you know, a commercial operator that's clipping the ticket on taking people to the top. So it's a pretty good setup. It's pretty harmonious up there. You know, it's good. I was really stoked how you touched on, it's cool how you touched on the setup of the Ben Lomond trails with the bike park and the gondola, because that's something we're really, really trying to push out there. Is that area has almost had a bit of an identity crisis over the years, that people presume that because, you know, there's gondola lift access, it is a full-blown commercial bike park. and we're always getting hit up about why there isn't like a dedicated bike patrol there. So we're really moving into that rebranding space of like, hey, we've got like a commercial uplift operator, but it's public trails for anyone to use, and hence that's why it's not like a commercial bike park. So yeah, it's cool that you touched on that, because that's cool for people to get that word out there, especially for visitors that are going to listen to this podcast potentially and come to Queenstown, and they can understand that. Yeah.
Do you think that has there ever been a discussion about like what a bike park patrol would look like, or if it's even feasible in a place like that?
Yeah, there has been discussions. It all boils down to funding for it, you know. And I think there's probably some health and safety and liability issues there as well. I mean, who's responsible for what, you know? Like with Skyline Enterprises giving people a lift to the top, and you know, when you buy a day pass or a season's pass, you sign a waiver that says, you know, like they are purely responsible for you, for getting you to the top, you know, and anyone else can be riding there. I mean, someone can go there for a night ride at 10 o'clock at night and crash and get evacuated off the hill by the ambulance, and because of those public trails, you know. So I think the patrol would have to be driven probably from the club and from the council, with the council being the actual land owner. You know, if it gets to a crux point where there is a lot of injuries there, or the local emergency services are starting to make noises saying like, hey, you know, we're a lot of our resources and our ambulance and search and rescue resources are tied up, you know, pulling injured mountain bikers off the hill, it would get to a crux point. So yeah, at the moment it's an interesting one, because at the moment we don't have any hard data really on like how many injuries are happening up there, because I think so many people are probably self-extracting themselves off the hill as well. You know, like if you crash and break your collarbone, you got your mates there, you can just walk down the fire road, the forestry road, and get to the medical center, which is right at the bottom of the gondola. So you know, there's probably a lot of that going on. So it's really hard for us to quantify like, you know, how many injuries are happening up there. I mean, we have a pretty good idea of how many riders are riding up there, but yeah, the injury statistics are a bit hard to pin down.
Yeah. What's the search and rescue situation in New Zealand? Is it all done through the ambulance service, or is it like here in Canada, it's all volunteer based? So.
Yeah. So for search and rescue is volunteer based, but I mean, there's probably a few situations where a mountain biker would be injured where they needed like search and rescue assistance to get extracted. A lot of the Ben Lomond trails, you know, we've got that fire road that weaves its way right up through the middle of the trail network. So obviously, you know, it's like any country, we've got an emergency number where you dial 111 and they'll ask whether you want ambulance, fire, or police, you know. So in that lower Ben Lomond trails, we have a whole bunch of signage that has like different zones as well. And, you know, we encourage people, you know, to obviously be aware of where they are, take photos of those zones. So when they dial 111 and say, hey, my friend's lying here with a broken ankle, you know, that 111 dispatcher can say, okay, it's Ben Lomond trails, and we're near, you know, like sign number 4 or intersection number 6 or something like that. So that definitely helps in that space. But yeah, there has been a few instances where the rider has been in such a precarious position with quite difficult access that we've obviously called on obviously the fire brigade or an actual dedicated search and rescue crew that come in with like, you know, like rope access and stuff like that to extract someone. And then obviously we've got the rescue helicopter as well. So we've got the Otago Rescue Helicopter Service that's called in with, you know, winch-based stretcher on a helicopter. And that's been used quite a lot to extract mountain bikers out of our areas as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Very similar to here. I mean,
pretty similar to most first world countries.
Yeah. We have some land managers that are kind of outside the there's a little bit of more like political boundaries, I think, here than
right.
I'd like to see. Like if it's on district land, then the fire department comes in, they might call in search and rescue. They don't like calling in search and rescue, I don't think here.
Yeah. Okay.
So I think there's a little bit of that as well. There's some politics there, but for the most part,
Yeah, we're pretty lucky in New Zealand that, you know, obviously with our ACC system, accident compensation system as well, that it's pretty good in the fact that if someone's injured and you call 111, you're going to get looked after regardless of what land you're on. You know, if you're on a legitimate trail or you might be doing something illegal, you might be on a legal trail or something. Yeah, it's kind of like a no questions asked thing. It just happens and we get people out. Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty good. We're pretty lucky in this country with our medical system and our accident system, eh?
That's good. something that was discussed in the last episode, and it's a topic that has kind of been really front of my mind lately as I kind of work in a little bit more outside of mountain bike advocacy, but more kind of in provincial parks where biking isn't actually allowed, and hiking and trail advocacy, but very similar kind of advocacy work. And one of the things that I've struggled with, and what I spoke with Matt Ball, the guest that I had from Nelson, who said, you know, we were just talking about how there seems to be funding for building new projects and a lot of interest in that, but not as much for maintenance. And something just before we kind of hit record, you mentioned that even your volunteership, like you've got a good draw when you want to get volunteers out to build a new trail, but not necessarily with the maintenance. How do we address that? Like, I don't know if we can solve that problem today, but like, I really want to kind of start thinking about this. And I think this is going to be, you know, the topic maybe for this, you know, season of the podcast is like, how do we get better at engaging and funding maintenance as opposed to just building?
Yeah, I know what you mean. It is a massive challenge for us. I mean, we're similar to probably a lot of other mountain bike clubs. Like we don't necessarily struggle to find funds for building new trails. You know, there's a lot of community grants and government grants around that you can apply for trail projects. And we're pretty lucky in Queenstown. We've got a couple of philanthropists here that have moved to Queenstown that have, you know, seen the love for mountain biking. They've taken it up and they've donated some massive money towards the mountain bike club as well for new trails. But yeah, it is a problem. You know, building the trails is one thing, getting the money for that, but then finding that continuous funding stream to maintain them is a challenge as well. You know, like we were saying, like we for years with the Queenstown Mountain Bike Club, we've had a really active volunteer trail building network where we call it the Wednesday Dig. So every Wednesday night, you know, we've always got a trail on the go where all the volunteers turn up and build trails, and we've achieved some huge results through that. You know, I look back over the years of how many trails have just been dug, you know, for free by hand by volunteers. We've tried over the years to try and do these volunteer maintenance days, and sometimes potentially on those more organic technical trails that people have had the passion for actually building, they'll be quite keen to, you know, go back and do some maintenance work and tidy them up. But I think the main challenge for us is more sort of the more intermediate flow trails in Queenstown that have been built, maybe machine built. They're really popular. And yeah, there's not much froth, so to speak, for volunteer maintenance on them. So that's where we have to look at, you know, creative ways, funding wise, to pay for that maintenance to keep the upkeep of those trails. Because those trails, you know, those type of flow trails are one, they're so popular, but they also take a lot of wear and tear as well. It's a challenge. We sort of have a bit of a maintenance structure where we've got three trails in town which are all flow trails, which have massive riding numbers down it, and we're trying to plan like a 3-year maintenance cycle where once every 3 years one of those three trails is getting a massive overhaul where, you know, we're taking the machine down there, you know, ripping up the surface, repacking the berms, changing some lines, you know, changing some elevation gradients just to try and get rid of some high braking zones and stuff like that and try and make it as sustainable as possible.
Mm. And are you bringing in a contractor for doing that, or is that something that the club does yet?
Yeah, we've got a couple of awesome contractors here. I'm not sure if you've heard of Tom Hay from Elevate Trails. He's he had three of the four Crankworx Slopestyle courses under his belt building them. Yeah, and he's a Queenstown local. He's a former president of the Mountain Bike Club as well. He's a good friend of mine too. So yeah, he's been awesome. And he's got so much like IP on all the trails down here. And yeah, we've got about three or four trail contractors we can call on here. But yeah, Tom's the main one. And then Kepler Rec from Dirt Design as well. He's got the maintenance contract for the Ben Moman trails and that area, you know, that high use area that's accessed from Skyline Gondola. So again, you know, having that knowledge base, especially with Kep, he actually worked for Skyline for about 5 years and then went and worked for Tom at Elevate and then went out on his own with Dirt Design. So he's got a huge amount of knowledge and, you know, IP about that hill and how everything works. So we're pretty lucky to have guys like that in our corner for contractors to really deliver a good product for us, eh?
It sounds like, I mean, you've got essentially a big project every year, like a machine built, you know, redo every single year. That's a lot of, I'm sure that doesn't come cheap. Like where do you find the majority of your funding as an organization is coming from? Is it diverse, or is it kind of a single event that you're getting a lot of your funding from?
Yeah, membership subs are a massive part. You know, we've got 2,200 members, you know, paying $50 per annum. So that contributes a long way. Community grants, like, you know, our administration person that for the Mountain Bike Club, you know, a big part of her role is just applying for grants, local grants, and then that philanthropy that comes in as well. So we do have a set amount of a maintenance budget every year that we set for the club that is purely, you know, like set towards maintenance of these trails to make sure we keep the upkeep of those trails. And then, you know, depending on our funding models, how many grants we get in, how many donations, then, you know, if we're having more money coming in one year, then we can look to expand and potentially like build a new trail or, you know, do more maintenance than we were planning. But we do have like a core maintenance plan document, because we know our trail network now. You know, we know that this trail is going to, you know, it's going to be out in the sun, out in the open with no shade, and doesn't get much moisture, you know, from sort of December to March. So we know it's going to get blown out by the end of the year. So we do know, we have a pretty good idea where things are going to sit. So with our set maintenance budget, and then obviously we have a contingency plan for weather events and flooding, or if we have a storm come through and blow a whole bunch of beech trees down, you know, in our forest, and we need to get an arborist in there to clear stuff. So yeah, we're pretty set in that. It's more just, you know, how flush we get with funding of how much we can expand. But then of course we run into the issue of if we want to build a new trail, or we have plans for a new trail, and we go to the likes of the local council or Department of Conservation to grant permission to build that trail, they're going to come back with a question of saying, yes, we'll approve this trail, but you need to prove for us that you've got the ability to fund the maintenance so it doesn't become, you know, doesn't become a white elephant in years to come. So that's one of the challenges now, is showing, you know, those organisations that, yes, we've got the money to build the trail, but also we've got the funds to maintain it going forward, because that's what they want to see. They want to see sustainable trails on their land.
One of the things you mentioned that I want to kind of just focus in on a little bit, if it's possible, is you mentioned kind of a maintenance plan.
Yeah.
And so do you have like a timeline or kind of like a 3-year plan or a 5-year plan or something? Like, you do you kind of have a bit of a forecast of like what you expect to maintain, so that you're not kind of surprised? Like, just I find like that type of planning is not always common with a lot of organizations, and so I'd love to kind of dig into that if it is something that you guys.
Yeah. That's I mean, obviously our real popular trails, I mean, as I said, those three flow trails we've got, Rude Rock and Hot Rod up on Coronet Peak, and then McNeely Gnarly, which is kind of our intermediate little jump trail in the Fernhill Loop area. Like, we know year to year pretty much how much riding and how much wear and tear they're going to get, and what sort of environment they're in as well. Like, those two trails up Coronet Peak, Rude Rock and Hot Rod, they sit under snow for a few months over winter, and then they do suffer from a lot of frost heave with the freeze thaw going there as well. So we know that they're always going to need to tickle up at the start of the season, just to make sure they're running right. Yeah, so we've got a pretty set plan with them. And then obviously we have other trails that have been built, that, you know, newer trails that get built and come online, it takes a few years for them to kind of bed in, and then us to notice like where the trouble spots are or how they're tracking, you know, with erosion and stuff like that. And then we can bring a plan forward with that. But yeah, we've got a lot of knowledge, as I say, like working with the likes of Tom and Kip. You know, they're out there, they see these trails, they tell us what's going on, and, you know, they'll give us some feedback, especially with new trails within a couple of years, saying, hey, this line's not working too well, we've got some erosion issues here, we need to change it. And they'll put proposals to us saying like, hey, we can go in and change this line, or take out that corner, or, you know, make the gradient a bit better. And then, because at the end of the day, we want our maintenance plan to be evolving, and if there's an area that's always costing us maintenance money every year, then we can start talking to those guys and say like, hey, is it more beneficial for us to spend a bit more money to change this line and make the trail more sustainable, rather than us just throwing money at maintaining it every year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it sounds like you've got one admin staff. Is that, do you have other staff or?
Yeah. So the mountain bike club set up, we've got 10 committee members. We're all volunteers. And then Natalie is paid 20 hours a week. So she's in a paid contractor position for the club that takes care of a lot of the admin side of things. Cause you know, as everybody knows, in these kind of organizations, you know, we're all passionate mountain bikers and we love getting out there and, you know, putting, you know, hands on dirt and building trails and doing cool events and stuff. But that background administration side of things can kind of be a bit taxing sometimes. So we're fortunate in the fact that we're a big enough organization with enough income that we can have a part-time paid position in there that sort of takes the pressure off. But it's self-propagating as well, you know, like the more Natalie does at admin and we're paying her for that, it's the club's getting taken care of better. There's more chances for her to put in funding applications for, you know, grants for new trails and maintenance. Yeah, it's definitely works really well.
How long has that role been a part of the trail organization?
So six or seven years. Yeah. Yeah. And it's slowly been increasing, you know, it started with 10 hours a week and then it was 15 hours a week, it's 20. And yeah, there's a couple of other big mountain bike clubs in New Zealand that have paid administration roles as well, which I think is really beneficial, but it is tough. You've got to get to a certain level of membership and a certain level of revenue to justify bringing someone on like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you know roughly like where your numbers were kind of before that role and like was there a growth? Like do you know like were you at 1,000 members kind of pre that hire?
It's been growing. So it was pretty crazy. So the Queenstown Mountain Bike Club from 2003 to 2010 was sitting at around about 100 members. It was really small. Just cruising. And then in 2011, Skyline Enterprises announced that they were going to open their gondola for uplift, for NTB uplift into the Ben Lomond Trails. And they announced that if you're a Queenstown Mountain Bike Club member, you would get a discount off the season's pass. So in that one summer of 2011, membership went from like 100 to like 1,000 in 1 year, which is kind of ironic that, you know, there was so many mountain bikers in town and they had a financial incentive to join the club. So yeah, it exploded then. And then obviously our relationship with Skyline was awesome. They kept continuing that discount for years. But I think now with the growth of mountain biking and the popularity of our destination, that's not so much a factor anymore. But I think what we've seen with our membership growth in the last sort of 5 to 10 years has been families and young kids getting into it. That's where our membership growth is really spiked. We have a family membership, and the growth in those family memberships over the last 5 years is just exponential. So, you know, I think it's kind of a worldwide thing where we're seeing so many young kids getting into mountain biking now. And it's probably just a maturity of the sport, you know, like all us guys that were all, you know, dirtbag downhillers back in the 90s, we're all growing up into our 40s now and we're all having kids and we're all still passionate about mountain biking. So it's just natural that our kids are into it as well, you know?
Yeah, totally. Well, and you know, that like that family membership, it's like, you know what, for a little bit more money, it's totally worth it. And it goes to a good place.
Yeah.
It's always one of those things I like to, it feels good to check that box. And
yeah, definitely. And it's cool. Like the whole kind of vibe of the club has changed over the years as well. Like when I was on the committee back, you know, 2008, 2016, it was literally, we were just a whole bunch of dirtbag mountain bikers that wanted to like build big jumps and charge down hills and stuff like that. And now, you know, the makeup of the club, you know, probably over half the committee members are older. We've got kids, you know, we're trying to organize like kids races and kids coaching days and, you know, build tracks and little skills parks for kids and everything, as well as, you know, still catering to that hardcore aspect. But yeah, it's definitely matured. It's pretty cool now.
You know, I think we're turning a corner as a culture, in the sense that like we saw in the past, like, you know, needing that incentive to buy that membership. And I think, that might be changing now, which is wonderful. Like we are seeing a better engagement from people. People kind of understand that, you know, no dig, no ride kind of mentality. And if you're going to ride the trails, you know, buy the membership. And whether it's, you know, maybe a little bit of shaming from friends or what have you, who knows, but it's good. I think it's, and maybe it's just a case of like, people are seeing the work that we put in as an organization, and they understand that like, oh, okay, this isn't happening magically. You know, these aren't trail gnomes. These aren't trail fairies out there just doing this. These are people working hard and we need to support them, which is great.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, Yeah, mountain biking is maturing, and people that are getting into mountain biking, because I mean, even since like, you know, the COVID era, there's so many more people that have discovered mountain biking and getting into it. And maybe it takes new people to our sport a couple of years to sort of realize, you know, the amount of effort that goes into these trails and what happens. But, you know, for us, we're in a situation in Queensland, like all our trails are on public land and you don't need to pay any money to go and ride them. So, you know, when people look at that and they look at the bigger picture and they're like, well, $50 a year is nothing for the amount of access I get to trails. It's huge, you know, and it goes back to that challenge with us of trying to capture all those visitors, all those visiting riders coming into town, trying to capture and clip the ticket, so to speak, on them a little bit as they come through, you know, because that's a massive challenge for us, is the fact that the last economic impact survey for mountain biking in Queenstown put it at $101 million per annum in economic spend directly related to mountain biking. So that's a huge, huge part of the local economy, but we don't have any direct way of clipping the ticket, so to speak, for someone that just comes and rides, you know, all our trails for a week. So we're trying to come up with creative ideas that way, where we can sort of, outside of membership, just try and get a little bit of revenue just off the top, just, you know, skimming the cream off the top there as well. One idea we're coming up with is to put a rental bike levy into the local shops, like a really, really small percentage of every rental bike that goes out comes back to the club. And it would be such a small percentage that, you know, it can either be absorbed into the price of that rental bike, or the rental shop can decide to put their price up by like 1 or 2% as well to absorb it, which wouldn't you know, change the mind of someone looking to rent a bike. That's one of the only sort of tangible ways we can look at sort of increasing that revenue off that visitor spend of people coming here to visit and ride bikes.
And the companies are receptive to that.
Yeah. No, we've been talking to it. We Mountain Bike Club, we have an industry meeting every year where we bring basically every commercial operator and every trail builder and anyone that's directly related in the commercial side of the mountain biking scene. We get them all together in a room and, you know, we shoot the shit and come up with a whole bunch of ideas and stuff we want to do. And the rental bike levy has been pretty well received. It's obviously, you know, you need uptake from all the shops renting bikes, because it's not really fair if it's some people are doing it, some people aren't. But yeah, it's been received pretty well. We're going to it's a bit of a slow burn, but we'll get there, yeah, to make it happen. And as everything increases, you know, even if it only means a small amount every year, but there's a contribution and it's going, it's pretty sweet. Yeah.
So you guys use Hive Pass, which Hive Pass has been a wonderful sponsor of the podcast for a little while, which has been great.
It's been awesome. That's been such a game changer for our membership administration, eh, Hive Pass?
Yeah, let's dive into that a little bit, because I think folks have been hearing the name Hive Pass on the start of each of these episodes, and I think it might be a good opportunity to kind of just share a little bit more about an actual kind of experience with using them. So what has Hive Pass allowed you to kind of do as an organization for membership?
Well, it's basically digitally automated our membership, which is great. I mean, I remember back in the days of early days of the club where, you know, membership was a manual system of people paying into a bank account and then you were physically sending them out a membership card, you know. It was a huge administration.
I'm getting a taste on my tongue from licking envelopes just by you.
Oh, yeah. That. Yeah, God, I remember those days, eh? Yeah, I mean, so that you know, digitizing and automating that membership has been awesome. But also, you know, the HivePass app is great for, you know, obviously people have got their membership show on their phone. They've got trail information. They can see where all our deals and discounts are. Like, it's a one-stop shop. It's so, so good, eh? And, you know, we find when people sign up for the membership, the auto-renew is really good as well for people. So, you know, if people want to be a member of the club and they can select auto-renew, and then it's just set and forget. You know, if they're going to live in Queenstown and be Queenstown locals, they know that, you know, $50 a year is going to come out of their account. And, yeah, it's great. I mean, we have a little situation where there's obviously people that live in Queenstown for a few years and sign up through HivePass, and then they leave Queenstown for somewhere else, and then they just come back, you know, to visit Queenstown for the good old times, eh? And they keep that membership renew ticking over because they know that $50 a year, you know, they're going to come back to Queenstown a couple of times a year or come back for a mountain biking holiday. They still want to contribute, so it's pretty awesome. But yeah, it's been great, and it's awesome for Flon to, you know, he created that, and now the uptake of other mountain bike clubs in New Zealand to see, you know, how beneficial it is for them is awesome. Yeah, it's been really cool.
your kind of short-term pass that you're selling as well, kind of aimed at tourists. Are you putting that through Hive Pass as well?
Yep, that's on Hive Pass as well. Yeah, it's hard. It's a bit of a hard one. We get pretty good uptake for it, but it sort of it takes you know, a lot of these people that are visiting Queenstown to ride bikes, they're going into like the local bike shops or something like that. So, you know, they can see our advertising there, you know, for the Queenstown Mountain Bike Club. So it's really awesome that we've got really engaging shop staff that can be like, hey, you know, like if you get this 2-week membership with Queenstown Mountain Bike Club, you can get a deal here and get a discount here and a discount here. And then, yeah, people are into it. And then, you know, maybe we might even get conversions of those people where they pay that $25 2-week pass and then they have an awesome week's riding in Queenstown, and you're like, you know what, that was sick, like I'm going to actually join the club as a proper paid up member. So yeah, it's almost like a little bit of a gateway to introduce people into that as well.
What's kind of the big things that are going to be happening this season? Like what's next on the horizon for you guys? Are coming into a spring and a summer season, so things are probably about to get busier out there. What's coming down the pipes?
Yeah, so we're just going to kick into a bit of pre-season maintenance now, but we've had huge amounts of snowfall, late winter snow at the moment. I mean, like some of our trails are sitting under a meter of snow at the moment. I'm just looking out the window, looking at a couple of peaks. So there will be a bit of a delay with getting some trails open with that snow. And we've had a delay on opening the Lower Ben Lomond trails as well with the Skyline Gondola just because of the amount of rain that was on there as well. So this season we're in a bit of a holding pattern just in a maintenance phase. We do have three new trail proposals that are currently in the permissions phase at the moment that we're pretty excited about. We're fairly confident we've either got funding for them or we're confident with them, but again it's just that negotiation phase with the local council and dock landowners of, you know, showing that we're up to speed with being able to make them sustainable and fund them. And then there's a old commercial forest over by Arrowtown, which is about 10 minutes north of Queenstown, called Coronet Forest, that's just been harvested of all the pine trees for a commercial forest. And that's going to go in and get planted into native. And we've been working really hard with the Queenstown Lakes District Council to put a whole new trail network in there over the next few years as well, which will be pretty cool. And it'll be pretty cool for the township of Arrowtown, because all those little satellite towns just kind of north of Queenstown and the Wakatipu Basin, they don't really have too many trail riding options up that end of the area. So yeah, Coronet Forest will be a slow burn over the next sort of 3 to 4 years of getting all that planting in. A lot of native planting. It's going to be fully fenced with a pest fence to keep out noxious pests. And you know, there's going to be a weed control program put in there as well, and then some bike tracks, and also there's going to be hiking tracks and horse riding tracks, and yeah, a whole bunch of other users in there. So that's going to be a pretty exciting project for the next few years.
How can folks have a look at the club? What's the website?
Yeah, queenstownmtb.co.nz. So it's a pretty simple website. Jump on there and have a look around. Eh? We've got plenty of news. Obviously, we've got our Instagram page as well, QMTBC. Pretty easy to find us. And keep up to speed with what's going on.
Awesome. Well, Fraser, thanks so much for joining me. It's been great chatting with you.
Yeah, no worries, mate. Always a pleasure.
This episode of the podcast was recorded on the traditional territory of the Tsleil-Waututh, Squamish, Musqueam, and Stolo Nations. My guests joined me from the traditional territory of the Niitahu. Now, if you're curious to learn more about the traditional territory that you occupy and recreate on, then visit native-lands.ca. Like always, you can find the show on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at FrontlinesMTB. You can also join the Facebook group at Advocates on the Frontlines of MTB. And you can send me an email or audio file to info@frontlinesmtb.com. Thank you to Alex for contributing to the conversation as a Frontlines VIPer. Thank you to Jeff, Alexa, Jacob, and Drew for your recent donations via PayPal. To become a Frontlines VIP member, to receive early info about upcoming shows, you just need to support the show via PayPal. You can find a link in the show notes. And in the show notes, you'll also find links to this show's sponsor, Hive Pass, and the Queenstown Mountain Bike Club. Music, as always, is by Lee Rosevere. Production notes by Jennifer Pride. Artwork is created by Brendan Gallagher-Watson at BGW Creative. And finally, I'm Brent Hillier. This is Frontlines. Thanks for listening, and happy trails.